This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. Got family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Blue Ridge Outdoor Supplies. Scott Payne is the owner of this business. He's in Elkton, Virginia. He also has a lure line, Mountain Rebel Lures and Baits. He's got a great coyote trapping video. He's also a fur buyer in Virginia. Anything that you're looking for and your trapping needs, give Scott a call and he'll get it right out to you. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're an ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it. Fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light. Sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dig. Shotgun toter, Republican voter, Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA, cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Well, hello everyone, this is Clint Locklear, and I want to do kind of a show tonight just talking about kind of a after actions review of the season, some of the things that I've noticed, some of the things that I've learned, some of the things that I thought of as I went throughout the whole year. You know, in reflecting back on your season, to me is a pretty important thing. You know, when we were in the military, when you got done with a mission, you always had an after-action review. And the reason you always want to have an after-action review is you can sit back from a third-party view, ask questions about what happened, what could have happened, what should have happened, how it could have happened better, what went wrong, what wasn't planned right, yada, 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 different stuff like that. So it's kind of what I'm going to do today, and I've got a series of notes that's going to be all over the place, but it's just different things that I paid attention to. So it's going to be going from coyote trapping to all kind of crazy things. Now, before we get started with that, I want to get rid of the negative part of the show before we get started. On the last show, or the second to the last show, where Norm interviewed me about different things, and I said Greg, which is Houston from Mississippi, squirreled in our thing like that. Now, that's just what it is. I mean, there's no way to get around that. But he sent me an email that, you know, and if I say something publicly and someone wants to rebuke that, I'm not afraid of that one bit whatsoever. He sent me an email, and it was titled Lying on Trapping Radio 103 from Houston Hortzog. And I'm going to read this to you. And then I'm going to say a few comments, and I'm going to forget about it. Because basically, I've already forgot about it anyway. But if he thinks I'm lying to him, if he thinks I'm lying to people on the radio show, let's just get this out in the open. Clint, I'm disappointed that you and Norm would take the low road with your radio following. You said Greg from Mississippi scrolled his way into our property, has a bunch of question marks. The owner never told me I need to check with you. I did talk with you on the phone several years ago about this place, and that one day I planned to trap on it. We talked about it at the school, and now by me. And now, by me coming here, I'm stealing animals out of your traps and ought to be ashamed. Please. I would have thought that with the business mind that you have, you would have taken the high road to capitalize on a moment to make even more money for the chain of events here. I have no idea what that means. I have planned to write some articles for the Trapping Magazine to share some trapping successes that have occurred along the way for me and goals I set for myself to acquire those dreams I have for trapping. I will also clear up the squirrel stealing property and stealing animals out of your traps or whatever else needs to be discussed. So that's basically a threat. We'll get to that in a second. Clint, if you care to discuss the matter, you can call me 601, and I'm not going to give his number out. You should already have it and could have checked this out before now if you'd wanted to, but if you decide that you want to believe whatever you want to believe and continue down the low road, then go ahead. This is not a doubt in my mind that the truth is on my side. I'll continue to believe that I continue to believe that, and I don't mind sharing it with anyone in doubt. P.S. It was not 70, it was 68 cats and 18 trap nights, with 16 trap checks due to rain. All cats and coons were skinned on stretchers each day. I also had my disabled brother that is on his walker with me. Got to look out after every minute of the day so he could share in this trap line also. This information is not for sympathy, but you can also quit saying that the ranch and fear has been trapped and the cats have been taken already, another dead zone. This reminds me of one of your videos where you say I don't say anything that is not proven because once it's said on air, people take it to the bank. That was not the exact wording. You may think that you are not happy with Greg from Mississippi. You can believe that I'm not happy with Clint Locklear from Tennessee or Norm Blackwell from Georgia. Those two are casting a whole different light. Well, that is what he says I'm lying about, that he went in there. Greg, dude, the facts are you came to that ranch as a guest to our trapping school last year. You knew we were going back to that ranch. That is private ground. That is not open public ground. That is not a road trapping system. That is a place that we have started a relationship with to have a long-term client as far as predator control trapping. You knew that when you came down there last year. Yes, I knew that you had worked for or knew the owner that owns one of the, that has something to do with the business of this ranch. You may have talked to me several years ago about this ranch. Dude, the fact remains the same. You came as a guest last year to a school and you worked it out through the boss, which I'll get to in a minute, to go down there and trap. So you got to go take the cream of the crop on private ground where you know someone was already going, where you got through the door because you were allowed to through a school to go down there and trap. Now, I did not say you were stealing fur out of my traps. But what you're saying and what you told the owner is very ingenuous. What you told the owner, according to quote from the ranch manager, is when you got a hold of the guy that owns that, you told him you're the one that trapped there last year and you want to come trap again. Now, technically, what you said was true. You did trap there as a student. Now, you know, and I know, and everybody that's listening to this knows, what you meant was to deceive the guy that owns the ranch. Because he doesn't deal with us directly. We deal with the ranch manager there, Tommy. So what you did is get in by acting like you were us. Because I guarantee you, according to what I was told, you did not say that you were a student there last year. You're the one that trapped there last year, which would have been Predator Control Group. So that was very deceitful in the way you got in there to begin with. No, the ranch does not have to tell you to check with me. That, dude, that's just common human decency, not to go into a private piece of ground that you know somebody else is trapping on, that you went there as a guest to trap on. There's no high road or low road. It's just what it is. You like the ranch. You figured out a way that you could talk the boss into overpowering the ranch manager because he didn't know what was going on, and you showed up to trap and you had the big man's approval. Now, what you're saying is kind of like Obama when he says he had 7.1 million people sign up for Obamacare, when in actuality, he had about 800,000 people that's actually paid anything. Technically, he is true. To look at Obamacare, you've got to sign up on the website. You have to give information. Saying that is signing up for health care is very deceitful, even though technically it is true. So when you told the landowner that you were the ones that trapped there last year, and you let him believe what you wanted him to believe to get back on the ranch so you get down there before we did, is not technically a lie, man, but you know good and well that was your intentions. And if not, I know you from being with you a week. You're a very intelligent person. You knew good and well what you were doing. You knew good and well if you took me on a place that you trapped in Mississippi that you've been trapping there, and I went as a guest on your trap line, and then I go out there and I get that property and I'm there before you get there next year, you're going to be perturbed. See, that's not competition. That's just borderline sliminess is what that is. And then when someone calls you out on it in an off comment and you email them and tell them they're lying on Trapping Radio, to me, character matters. It really does. I try not to deal with people that are of low character. I try to go out of my way that what I say is as close to the truth as I know it. That means a lot to me. So when you call me a liar, basically by saying I'm lying on Trapping TV, I've got a right to do that. You know, and you're going to threaten me with a writing articles in a trapping magazine? Dude, there's going to be more people listening to this radio show where I explained what happened about this than there is on the Trapper's Post, Trapper and Predator Caller, and Trapper's World combined. So trying to threaten me with something like that is insane. None of those magazines have the footprint. Fur Fishing Game is the only one that could do that, and they're not going to let you post something like that because it's trivial. So don't threaten me with that about you're going to write something negative about me. Write all you want to. I get enough negative press as it is, and I really don't care. I just kind of do my own thing. you know, and saying that we took 100 cats off there last year. You took 68. That's 168 cats in a calendar year. Now, Norm and them are catching cats down there right now. It's not near the number it would be, and it's not near the number it should be, because somebody went in there ahead of time to trap it. That's all we were saying. If you don't understand that, guy, I do not know what to tell you. That's just basic trapper morality right there is all that is. You do not go as a guest on somebody and then go take the property away from them by saying whatever it is you come up with. You knew good and well that that was not the correct thing to do. You wanted to trap the ranch, and now you're trying to justify it. You're trying to justify it by basically threatening me, talking about your disabled brother, and using quotes of mine, and shame on me and Norm. Give me a break, dude. Now, if we were trapping national parks and you did that, hey, there ain't nothing wrong with that. But you know good and well what you did. Okay, now I'm going to be through with this unless you want to keep continuing. But dude, you're going down a losing path here. What you did was not, I mean, it's not a crime. It's just something that most people don't want to have done to them, and they don't want to be doing it to somebody else. It's just common decency, I guess. Or maybe I'm just the only one that still believes that matters. I don't know. Now, I'm off of that. And before we get into the after action review of this last year, guys, if somebody takes you on their trap line and they go to a farm that's private ground and they have permission, do not try to finagle, sneak, do whatever you have to do to get in there and call that competition. That is not competition. Competition is getting your own ranch or your own farm or getting the one next to it. Nothing wrong with that. The reason a lot of guys are very hesitant about giving instruction that could help a lot of trappers out, and some really big name guys won't do it anymore, is because they take trappers on instruction, and next year when they show up, that somehow the trappers figured out how to get them kicked off with their own trap line that they've been trapping on, or they've already got the cream of the crop and moved on. That's why a lot of guys don't give trapping instruction anymore. And if you were them, you wouldn't be doing it either. Now see, I don't see that the same. There's places around my house where I filmed part of Utterly Simple video. Every year I can go back to those places and there are traps set on those creeks in the exact same place at the exact same way that I showed it. That doesn't bother me one bit. You know, most of those places, because of my schedule, I may not trap here, but every couple of years, or one out of 3 years, or one out of 4 years. So when I'm talking to a landowner here, you know, it's not like a paid job that someone's going to do. If someone's going to talk to a landowner and they just want beaver and otter gone, and they set those places up, I don't care about that at all. I mean, you know, for one, I put the video out and somebody has sat there and watched that enough to figure out where those locations are, and they're doing exactly what I showed them to do in the video. I'm totally fine with that. But don't confuse competition. I love competition. To me, that makes someone better all the time. But if I've got farm A and you've got farm B, and I try to figure out how to get into farm B, and you took me there as a guest to run on your line, dude, that's just not right. And you know it's not right. And no matter how you try to justify something like that, you're never gonna be right. And I tell you what that is. That is a form of greed. That's exactly what that is greed. And if you want to be successful about anything or get anywhere with anything, a greedy person never succeeds because their mindset is not in the place to where they can succeed. And I don't care if it's business or trapping, family, hobbies, anything. If you're going to think in a greedy manner all the time and try to figure out how to do something that you know is not correct, just so you can gain a little bit more and then justify why you did it, that means your mindset's in a wrong place. And you're not going to be helpful to you or anybody else because you're just being greedy. And nothing good comes out of being greedy. That's a lot different than someone taking care of their self-interest. If I'm trapped in a certain place and you want to get the place next to it, knock yourself out. If you want to cut the animals off before they get in that ranch, knock yourself out. If we're road trapping together and you cut me off, knock yourself out. That's competition. But going and trying to take land away from somebody that you went in on as a guest, that ain't competition. Okay, so now since that's out of the way, like I said, if someone, and there's one other thing about someone said I said something that wasn't correct. And this may be true because I just saw the email and I haven't had time to go look at it. On Trapping TV episode 2, apparently I talked about a turkey study and I said the University of Oxford and it should have been the University of Mississippi. So I'm going to take the guy at his word that it should have been the University of Mississippi instead of the University at Oxford in Mississippi. So I'm doing a whatever to back up on that one. The study, the numbers are the same, but where I said it came from apparently was wrong. When I was looking those up, that was about a decade ago. So if I say something wrong, I'm not worried about saying I said something wrong. I mean, as much exposure as someone has when they write as much as I do on the internet and they do these type shows and they do videos and demos and stuff like that, somewhere down the road there's going to be said, something said that's not exactly right. So if a university gets screwed up about a study or something like that, I have no problem whatsoever going back and saying what it is. Let's get into the after action review of this year, because except for some control work I've got coming up, you know, basically first season's over. It's beginning of April. You know, down here, everything's pretty much burnt as far as value. You could still go coyote trapping, beaver trapping if you want to, but coyotes have been worthless for a long time because of where we're at and all the fences. And beaver's starting to get really weak, so there's really no value of that. So first season is basically over. And, you know, just some of the things I'm going to go over, and they're sporadic, but they really stuck in my head a lot about different things about this season. And some of these may help you, and it may not. I'm not really sure, but it's just things that kind of make you go, huh, on the trap line, really. One of the most strange things this year that I came across in a way that I've never seen it this bad before is coyotes that were absolutely scared to death. I've been around a lot of places that they'll run helicopters, or you'll have some ranch hands run snares, or they'll be taking pop shots at them, you know, out of deer stands and stuff like that. And that'll cause the coyotes a lot of times to go to more reclusive parts of the ranch, places where there's not people or farms or in a national forest, to get away from where that pressure's at. But what was happening this year is one of the ranches we were on really seemed to step up what they were doing, because once we got to talk to the helicopter guys, I mean, they really hammered the coyotes and bobcats and hogs and coon from the air down there. So, you know, plus, and it's not just when they're shooting, it's also when you get on those ranches, they do animal counts and they do culling from helicopters. And if you've never seen that before, they've usually got a biologist with them or somebody from the ranch, and then they will spot deer, they will net the deer, and then when they get it on the ground, they make a decision what they're going to do with it. And there's a lot of pressure going on there with helicopters. And where we were at, because of the immigration reform talking that keeps going on in the news, illegal immigrants were trying to come across the border in mass attack while we were down there. I mean, I've never seen them destroy fences the way that they've been going down there. which meant that the Border Patrol guys had helicopters in the sky all the time. Now, to a coyote, he doesn't know if it's a helicopter coming to shoot at him or to net a deer, or it's Border Patrol trying to get a border jumper. He doesn't know which one it is. He just knows that that piece of equipment makes that loud noise and he can hardly get away from it. It's bad news. So that ratchets up what that coyote's feeling all the time because there's all this type of activity. Another thing that was going on with this ranch that we found out after about 3 weeks being down there, one of the guys was kind of amazed that we caught what we caught. And our catch was way down, you know. Last year we did about, I think off that particular ranch it was right at 60 or 65 bobcats. This year it was 40. So that's a big percentage drop. Now Norm and them are down at Freer right now at a different ranch. So the number's going to be, you know, a lot higher about what's caught down there this year because those two ranches were in that 173 cat number. But, you know, that was a significant drop. 60 to 40 is pretty significant. Now, let me tell you, to catch those 40, and that's not counting any students' cats. That's just the cats we caught. But the 40 that we caught, because they took our cats home, but the ones that we caught, we really, towards the end, I mean, we were really having to hustle to catch them. And that's, we're going to come back to the coyotes on that too, because we started really trying to hammer the coyotes at the same time. But the pressure they were getting, but one of the guys that runs the deer pens there was amazed we were still catching as much as we were, is because of everything that's been on the Outdoor Channel and stuff like that. Everybody that goes down there and shoots a deer then wants to automatically turn around and go predator calling, which I totally get. I mean, if I was on a ranch in Texas, and most of those people are probably coming from the city or something, they're watching all this stuff on TV, you know, you got a guy there that knows the ranch and he knows where predators are at, and you want to go hunt some of them, you know, to have an extra hunt kind of type thing, and they're getting paid mostly on tips. A ranch guy's going to do his best to guide a guy that wants to go shoot a coyote or a bobcat. Well, we found out that it was probably somewhere between 100 to 150 coyotes and bobcats were killed this year off of this place. That's not counting any of the kills that just the guys that ride around the ranch and shoot. And it doesn't account for the new policy, apparently, that they've got where everybody that goes and run feeders has a rifle now, and they're trying to shoot the raccoons like crazy. And they did a very good job, I can tell you that. Because over 12 months, you know, shooting so many a week times 52 weeks into being a lot of animals. And that's just a fact. So you had all this pressure on this ranch like I've never seen. And a lot of the pressure, I believe, was really becoming when you have the movement this year that we had with the illegal aliens coming across the border at night. It must have felt like to a coyote or a bobcat or anything that the woods were moving, because they were moving, because there was so much activity. And then you throw in the horses from the Border Patrol and the German Shepherds and everything else, it's just like crazy land down there to a coyote. And I was talking on my phone one night, right about to my wife one night, right about dark, and it's about 2.5, maybe 3 weeks into it, and I'm talking, I'm sitting on top of a hill, I've got the Jeep turned off, I found a spot that I could somewhat have cell service where we could understand each other, and I'm looking out the window, and I see a coyote bolt across this sendero, which a sendero is basically just like a great big cut strip through the mesquite. Well, it's like a road should be there, but it's really not a road. And they just kind of bush hog it, a roller chop it every couple of years. And this one was, I mean, some of them are 15 miles long. And they're about 50, 75 yards wide. And it's really thick on the sides, and it's really open in the middle. And I watched this coyote come out of the brush. Now, I'm like 300, 400 yards away from him. He gave no indication whatsoever that he saw me in the Jeep. but he came out and he wasn't running like all the other coyotes I've seen. He was literally hunched low to the ground, kind of like you would be if you were in a faraway country and people were shooting at you and you had to go in an open area. And it wasn't like he was trotting and looking like they normally are when I see him around here. It was a full-blown sprint. Head and tail down, body hunched to the ground, and I'm talking about moving. As fast as his little legs would take him. And I was like, holy cow, well, maybe that coyote saw me, you know, or something like that, or heard me talking on the phone. Then farther down, about 5 minutes later, there were two more coyotes that came out, coming from a different direction across that sendero, and there were some deer and stuff. They acted the exact same way. And while we had some students down here from Hunter and his dad from Kansas. We started looking at some places, location-wise, that was really not for coyotes. It's more for what you think about in the few areas where you have cats more out in the Arizona, New Mexico, and California type places. Really thick, deep draws. It's really secluded. You know, you could a lot of these you could hunch a man over and walk down through there, and if you were 100 yards away you wouldn't see him. And one of these days I happened to be looking in there for cat sign and I noticed all of these coyote tracks coming and going. So, you know, on the last day that Hunter and his dad were down there, we started looking around and all these places that were not really for coyotes when you think about a coyote location, every one of them had coyotes going through this really rough, almost cat-like type locations. I mean, washed out draws, you know, they were having to duck and weave really, really hard to move around. For us to move around, I mean, you almost had to have clippers with you just to get through it. It was that thick, and it was, like I said, it's in a place that they couldn't see out, but hopefully nothing can see in. And we started noticing this trend. Well, after Hunter and his dad left, you know, that was so strange, because if you can imagine, you got a road that's going right next to one of these draws that you can see tracks in if there's tracks. And there's not a single coyote track on the road. There's not a single dropping on the road. But you go into the thick cover where you almost need to be on your hands and knees, and there's coyote tracks, and they're coming and going. And the only time that the coyote tracks would cross the road was where that draw would intersect a two-track, and then they would bolt from one side to the other. They were making a living inside of there. So we started setting traps in there, and lo and behold, we started catching coyotes. And I'm talking catching coyotes in places, if you've had the thought that coyotes need to be out in the open, dude, you couldn't get one of these out in the open. And if he was out in the open, I don't care what magic you had in the bottle or what your favorite set is, he ain't stopping for nothing, because he knows there's going to be a 7mm bullet run up his butt if he does. So when you're on the classic coyote locations, which we normally catch fine down there, nothing. I was making sets, and you'll see some of it coming up in Trapping TV, where I had to trim bushes and be on my hands and knees and lean to the ground to put sets in. That's how awkward it was for me to put a set in these locations. I mean, literally overhanging cover where it would be scraping the back of the coyote is where I was having to catch these things at. And I've never seen anything like that. And somewhere in the middle of all that, I remember all these phone calls that I normally get from New York and Michigan and Wisconsin. That seems to be the bigger states that stick out in my mind, that, you know, they start the season and everything's going good. They're catching coyotes, they're seeing sign, they're doing this, that, and the other. Then all of a sudden the coyotes just, I mean, disappear. And the common denominator almost every single time to those phone calls is deer season opened. Now, see, on that ranch where I was at, you were having the illegal aliens running around all night long. You had Border Patrol with their helicopters, horses, four-wheelers, trucks, dogs, everything else running around. Then you had the guides taking them out, the hunters out and shooting them. They were actually setting some snares before we got there. They were shooting them out of helicopters. And, you know, that seems really extreme to someone that's not from that environment down there on the border. But think about it from a coyote's point of view. If you're in a woods that you've been making a living at, and then you pretty much see somebody every now and then, and you hardly ever get shot at, you know, and then all of a sudden, one morning, there's hunters up in trees everywhere, and every time that you stick your head around a corner, someone's popping a shot at you. To that coyote in Michigan, when deer season opens, is no different than what was going on down in Texas. Now, since I've never trapped Michigan during deer season, I can't tell you exactly the type of terrain you need to go for, but I will bet it's going to be the darkest, ugliest, nastiest, hardest place for you to get to, and you'll find those coyotes. Because if it's ugly and hard for you to get to, it's also ugly and hard for most fair weather hunters. They're not going to go through that to get there either. So you're going to have the places that's easy to get to. It's going to get a tremendous amount of pressure and a tremendous amount of activity, and then you're going to have these other parts that are not. And that's where your coyotes are going to go. And if the coyotes get stuck in that really high intensity area, they're going to be in places that you would not think a coyote would be at, because it's going to be really thick. It's probably going to be some low ground if it's not holding water. It's going to be something, because that coyote knows he's got to hide when everybody's moving around the woods. That's what we're seeing in Texas. And that's pretty much what I find out when I talk to these guys from up north with deer season. Because when y'all's, you know, our deer season here is different. It starts like in August. You know, you can start bow hunting and muzzleloader hunting. Then you go into rifle hunting and more bow hunting. And it just goes on and on all the way through February. You know, so there's not this, you know, our coyotes here don't have this great big, okay, it's opening day season and half the state shows up in orange with guns. It's not that way here. But up there it is. I mean, a lot of you states up north, y'all still close the schools on the opening day or, you know, work, because you're going to go hunting anyway. But you're not the only one. And all those people hitting the woods is causing a reaction from those coyotes. So if you're still going to trap during that time for coyotes, you're going to have to figure out where they're at. And there's not an easy answer for that. You're going to have to get out and you're going to have to look. And even when you find where they're at, when they're shook up that much, it's going to be a slower catch. I don't care what you got in the hole or what type of sets you've got, unless you're use snares or blind sets, it's going to be a slower catch because they're going to be spooked. And if there's a lot of pressure like we were seeing down in Texas, and you're somewhere up on National Forest where there's an army shows up and starts shooting everything, those nice little outside corners and different things like that and intersection points of roads are going to turn into meaningless time suckers of a coyote set, because a coyote is not going to stop out in the open and feel comfortable to work your set. He's going to know it's there, but it ain't worth him dying over. Because once they get wound up, every time the wind blows or a mouse farts or a bird sneezes, they're moving. So they're ramped up anyway when you got a big hole with a bunch of lure or something like that. And then now you're going to throw that pressure on them. The only way you're going to really get those coyotes to work is you're going to have to figure out in the thicker stuff away from people where they're actually traveling. And it may be right on the inside edge of, you know, hardwoods to spruce where you got a swamp on the other side, something like that. I would imagine is where I would start looking. I would start looking in beaver swamps. You'll probably start seeing a lot of coyote tracks showing up on beaver dams and those little islands out there if it's a big beaver swamp. different things like that. If you're, if you've got a type of water where you've got a lot of islands, you know, and the water's not 100 yards across to get to the island, you'll probably find coyotes starting to show up on those little islands. But that's what we were dealing with. And, you know, one thing that, that I automatically knew, because I've kind of dealt with some pressure before, but not on this scale, is you go super, super low key. You know, you don't start blowing out these big holes and these fancy trench sets and these great big deep this and showy gaudy that when you're going to be trapping these coyotes. If they're already on edge, you're going to have to get them. You're going to have to rely more on gland lures, possibly urines, more natural type baits, stuff that it is not so exotic. You know, and you need to have a relationship with your lure maker to know what that is. I mean, like Cat Collector normally nails coyote after coyote down there because that's more of an exotic lure, even though it's for bobcats. It didn't do anything on coyotes this year. Now, Fur Check down there and Gland Lure or Federale's bait and Gland Lure, because they're not exotic and they're not so ramped up with all this wild stuff, because of the pressure they were at, it knocked the hell out of them once I figured out where they were at. And you'll be able to see this on Trapping TV when this comes out. And you can find that on Wolfer Nation or on my YouTube channel, Wolfer Nation. You'll be able to see some of the places that I was having to set, because it's crazy. You know, because a logical coyote trapper in these places have roads right next to them, would set on the on these intersections on these roads. But you would have sat there till your truck rasted shut or the pressure went away. One of the two. But you weren't going to get any coyote activity there. You had to go to where you didn't want to go to catch them. So if you go out and you're scouting somewhere, pay attention to what the hunting seasons are. Really think about if it's easy for you to get to, it's going to be easy for every Tom, Dick, and Harry city hunter to get to. If, you know, if sometimes you may need to go through a little more to get a trap line started off the main road a little bit, where you got to use four-wheelers or run a boat line or something, a canoe line, to get away from people if you're thinking about coyotes, because it'll really, really mess with you. Now, another thing about Texas this year that was wild, that wasn't just Texas, but it's where the exclamation point really came on this to me, was the weather was so messed up this year that breeding seasons got out of whack. I mean, when I'm in southern Tennessee, almost in Georgia, and I'm busting ice before Thanksgiving to try to check beaver traps, that's not normal. Not normal the way it's been the last 15 years, normal anyway. Then we go to a warm spell that's short, and then we get down to, we were below zero where I live. Now, to you guys up in Minnesota and Michigan, y'all may laugh at that, but it's not funny to the animals, I promise you that, because it's such a drastic difference in what's going on. We didn't have the rainfall that we normally have in the winter, which was nice for me when I was water trapping, I can tell you that. But it just a lot of changes. It was just a weird winter. But what happened that we noticed down in Texas is we started catching in March female bobcats that were already milking. Now, what's strange about that? Well, it's extremely strange. And it's really going to mess up a trap line. Because normally, the very end of February to the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks of March, normally right in that time frame is when you have like 2 weeks of where the breeding season's hot and heavy, and you got a lot of toms moving, so you got a lot of extra cats on a piece of property to catch, which is going to probably be, you know, 30, 40, 50% of your catch. And if they're not doing it, that means you're not catching them and they're not there. But for them to be milking and already have kittens, and the gestation period on a bobcat means they went into breeding season down there in December. So that's like 2 months off. And it really messed it up. And I talked to some other people in some different states that they were seeing that with otter a month and a half before they should be seeing that. Now, from a trapper's point of view, your numbers are going to be off. You don't want to be taking bobcats or otter or anything else when they have young, because that's your future harvesting stock. But even besides that, I think animals that are pregnant are going to act different than ones that are not. I think when they're trying to find some love, they're going to act different than they are when they already found the love. Because, and especially with female bobcats and female otter will start going to more secluded places and hanging out in a smaller area, and she's trying to find somewhere that's safe to raise that litter. Well, bobcats, I believe, somewhat do that the same way, because if you think about a human woman, when she's pregnant, she's going to be very, what's the right word here? Scared's not the right word, very cautious. You know, and then what I found out with the bobcats down there is I had to start toning down my bobcat sets, because the really big, open, showy, goey, flashy things that I normally do just was not working the same. Because where they were at in their part of their year was not where I thought we were should be at in our part of a year, and they were acting different, so we had to start toning those down. And it was just very, it's very frustrating on our part. But guys, that's just part of trapping. You know, it's just one of those things. Now, you know, this isn't something I observed this year, but I'm gonna tell you a little bit. This year down in Texas was one of those times that you just never hear about in magazines and videos. I mean, the weather was weird. It was wetter than normal. Breeding season was off, this, that, and the other. I mean, we broke the front ends out of trucks, screwed up injectors, melted Polarises, busted tailgates, knocked the windows out of campers, flat tires on top of flat tires. The catch was low. Everything about it sucked, basically, as far as a normal year down there. And if you're thinking about going full-time trapping, or you're thinking that you're going to go on one of these out-of-state trips and you've got a dollar amount set, or it's like, you know, I'm going to lose the house type thing, if you're going to be into trapping on a big scale and going different places where you got more expenses, you've got to have a realistic expectation that not every single trapping trip you go to is going to be the Super Bowl. Because basically what we're playing in this year was a high school semifinal football championship, and that's as good as it got. And it didn't have nothing to do with us. It didn't have anything to do with the whatever. It wouldn't have mattered whoever was there. Not every year is going to be stellar. Not every year is going to be super, you know, I can't wait to get to Facebook and put all my pictures up there. That's just not reality. So you've got to have a group on that. I've been on a lot of trips that have been failures. I've been on a lot of them that's been successful. You know, but when it comes to what I'm writing about and showing pictures of, there just ain't a whole lot of pictures on the sucky years. So it gives the impression that they're all great years. And that's not the fact. And it's not the fact for anybody. I mean, you know, you get to talk to Johnny Thorpe, he can tell you some train wreck stories about going out of state. You know, when I was taking instruction from Craig O'Gorman, he was telling me some of them. But it's just not stuff that you're going to find on the internet. And most people with any type of public presence is not going to want to admit that they didn't have a good year. Guys, I did not have a good year this year. I did decent on beaver and otter when I was at home. I caught some raccoons. If they weren't really big, I turned them loose because we don't have a lot of them. You know, Texas was really slow. You know, you trap as hard as you can go. You keep setting traps. You're trying to figure them out you best you can. But I tell you what happens on these years that nothing goes right. The trapper has a choice. And that choice is very simple. He can grow or he can curl up and cry. I'm not very good at the curling up because I'm too fat, and I don't like crying because the Army kind of beat that out of me. So you got the grow section, but you got the choice on which one you want. If you take the growing part, it made me evolve in how I now know under pressure what I've got to look at and how I've got to trap these coyotes. That could have been theory before then, but now I've seen it, I've done it, I've got the t-shirt. See, the bad year this year has made me a better trapper for the years to come. The ones like last year when we were doing our bobcats, we had 173 predator control group, me, Norm, and Albert. You know, we're bringing in cats every day, you know, by the armful. Everything was going good. The weather treated us right. You know, we got on fresh ground. We did decent on the older ground. Didn't have the truck problems. Didn't have the illegal alien problems. Didn't have all the pressure problems. Everything went smooth. You know, to me personally, from a learning perspective, this year is way more valuable than last year. So now when I find myself in that situation again, I can adjust, and I can adjust quickly. Because it took me probably 10 to 15 days to fully figure out what was going on and figure out where the coyotes were moving at. And then I need to start toning down the bobcat sets. Because I've never had to do that. You know, a coyote location is a coyote location. It wasn't this year. My bobcat set made me probably $100,000. But it didn't work like it should this year. So I had to learn to adjust to that. Another thing down there that we had to adjust to was because they were shooting so many coon off these feeders, the coons kind of figured out, maybe I don't need to go there anymore. So what's going to set, you know, dog proofs two or three on each feeder was not the same result. So what did we have to do? Well, we started more like road trapping them, where you have low spots and travel ways and creeks and different things, or the trails that are coming close to a feeder and you find someone with some coon sign, or you put out a bobcat set and you start seeing coon sign checking you out and you start putting your dog proofs out. We had to adjust how we were doing that. But I think it's more valuable to the trapper to literally be in that situation sometimes than to always be where it seems like everything's going the way it should. Now, while I was down there, I know that I did the portable pocket thing, the whole show on that, and I can tell you guys, I started working on a video for that to show how I'm using that on all these different animals. And from even down in Texas, with the pressure the coyotes were on, it's going to be really, really hard for me to go back to the way I was trapping. The advantages that I was seeing from this little system with a portable pocket was amazing. It really was amazing. I'm not sure exactly what else I can say about that, but it's one of those things, even under pressure, coyotes did not have a problem getting caught. Which tells me when they're not under pressure, it's going to be even easier. But the thing about it, when it rained, and it did rain down there, there wasn't one of my trap sets out of commission. You could follow me down a road as a trap thief, and you would never know where a trap was with one of those portable pockets unless there was a coyote standing there. They are invisible once you learn how to do that. You know, that part was amazing. The speed of setup and taking down, I actually believe it's quicker to pull the portable pockets than it is my drags, which means I'm not giving up my drags, don't get me wrong, but I'm not going to have as many drags, and then I'm going to let this kind of play out over some time and see where it goes. But it worked amazing. We caught hogs. We caught javelina, bobcats, coyotes. Raccoons. I mean, you know, then you got the beaver and the otter and everything else that we were catching before we went down there. Then other guys we gave some to, they're catching fox and everything else. So, I mean, it's just one of those things at the end of the year, I look back on it and go, holy cow, I wish I'd have had that 15 years ago. I mean, especially trapping in the east where the rain can be such an issue, that would have been such a big game changer over the course of 10 years in income that it would have been unbelievable. Same thing with the beaver and the otter. But the coyotes and the bobcats, because once you kind of get the system down, it's so freaking fast. It's so weatherproof. And I can't even, I've tried to come up with something why it's not good, and I just can't come up with it yet. Somewhere down the road, something's going to happen, I promise you that. But the portable pockets did really, really good. You know, I talked about the vehicle damage. Guys, if you're going out of state and you're going somewhere to road trap, it's not going to really matter. If you need to really think about the vehicle you're driving to where you're going. And a lot of people are surprised when I went from a one-ton truck to a Jeep. I bought that's the only vehicle I've ever bought new in my entire life. It had 0% interest is the only reason I bought that. The Jeeps hold their value so much, the difference between a new Jeep and a used Jeep is like $4,000. I bought the new Jeep. I've got a full lifetime warranty on this thing above what the factory was for $3,000. So no matter what I tear off, rip off, meltdown on that Jeep, all I gotta do is find a Chrysler dealership and they gotta fix it until the day that I sell it or die. When I bought that Jeep, I took it straight down to Tom's 4x4 in Chattanooga. We did $4,000 work on the suspension and the gearing of that Jeep. Because I've been going to Texas for several years. I've seen Toyotas where they actually break the shock mount, slap off the frame. And that's a tough truck. Every 2 years with my Dodge, I had to replace the whole front end. The mechanic had to go over all the bolts on the transmission after I lost the transmission because the bolts would back out because vibrations were so high. Shocks only lasted me a year. That type of terrain is like going out in the Arizona desert and trying to cover 150, 200 miles a day. It's just wicked bad on a vehicle. I know that I was going to keep going out there. So I match the vehicle of what my big campaign is every year is out there. Now, if I go back to really road trapping beaver or otter, say in Louisiana, the Jeep's going to be an issue because I don't have that great big old truck bed anymore. I'll figure something out. But that's not where I'm at right now. So if you're going out of state, think about your vehicle that you're going to. Diesel trucks are nice until you get to places where the heaviness hurts you, or the dust in the air hurts you, or you can't see to turn around, because you get on a lot of places, there's just not a lot of places to turn around. If it's really rough and you've got to, you know, I get tickled. I watch these shows all the time. You know, you're clicking through the channels and people will drive somewhere out in the desert to go do what I do four-wheeling every single day to check traps. It is abusive to a vehicle. So you've got to have that vehicle maxed. And the only vehicle that came out of Texas unscathed this year is the Jeep. And the worst it had on it this year is a taillight went out. I can live with that. You know, but if I would have went down there with a truck like everybody else's, there was no money made because of vehicle repairs this year. That's just life. But you got to match that vehicle to whatever it is that you're going to be doing. Okay, we got to play around a lot more with the FB2 while we were down there. That's the Freedom Brand Dog Proof Trap that's kind of like a Duke or a Grizz. It's got the dog. It's not push or pull. It's pull. And, I mean, all I can do is give that thing two thumbs up. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. The only thing that I found very interesting on it, because with the students and Norm and everybody having different brands of dog proofs, I got to play with theirs alongside of this one. the leverage on this Freedom Brand Dog Proof, the FB2, the one with the dog on it, is either by luck or by or whatever. He got the leverage right on that, so you can set it on a hair trigger straight from the factory. And if you try it on a Duke or a Grizz or a T3 or something like that, and you get above halfway in the notch, the trap's going to fire off on you. This, you can get this literally within an eighth inch of the end of the dog. So when the coon bumps it, it goes off. And I got to give them kudos on that. But that trap worked out very well. You know, I still use more of the FB1s myself, but I have to say that worked out really good. Now, another trap that I've absolutely fallen in love with, and if I could still find the Barry White music, I'd be playing it right now. It's the Bridger number 3 Dogless. And I tell you how much I fell in love with that trap. I may be getting rid of some of my CDRs, but there's two reasons for that. But the number 3 Dogless trap, and apparently they've got a number 2, but I haven't seen them. But the the number 3 is a brute. It is a dream to bed. It's really easy to set. It's got a pen on it, if you haven't seen them, kind of like a TS-85. So it's dogless, and that, and the whole pen kind of goes over the jaw. The difference between this and the TS-85, and I guess you could do this with a TS-85, is they either filed out or are milled out a little notch. So when you're setting the trap and you got your hands down on the lever and you're pulling up on the pan, all you want to do is to barely get that metal above the jaw, kind of come up with your hands a little bit on the springs, and you'll feel it hit bottom end on the, like, it's kind of like a night latch, I guess, but upside down, and it'll bottom in. I didn't have to adjust a single trap that I used down there. You from the coyotes and the cats and stuff and the coon that I caught, damage, what damage? I've got them fully modified. That's the way I ordered them from Tim up there at Minnesota. You know, they're offset, they're laminated, they're base plated, they're four coiled. I'm not quite sure the full coil is necessary as much as it is, but I wasn't seeing the damage because it had really nice lamination on there. But the way it grabbed animals, the way it set, the way I never had to fiddle with them ever once. It's compact. It weighs, it's less than half of one of my CDRs, which, because I've got a Jeep now, I've got to start taking into consideration some of the weight. And since I'm going to be using way more of the portable pockets, it would just lighten up this system for me if I didn't use as many CDRs and I use more of the Bridgers. And I've got a guy in Mississippi who's going to be looking at cutting out some pieces on the end so I can still use them on my cat sets and have that straight line out away from the stock pan. So they're going to be modified the way I'm going to do them on the pan, but it's not going to be a big pan like on my CDRs. But it is a very big pan for a coil spring trap. I mean, really big. And it doesn't, the pan doesn't hit the levers or anything like that, so that's really, really nice. Now, another thing about this year that I was thinking about when I was just kind of thinking about what we're going to talk about is ice. Like I said, this is going to seem strange to you guys up there in Maine and New York and Minnesota and Wisconsin and all that. We get ice here normally, you know, 2 or 3 times a year. It's here for 3 or 4 days and it's gone. This year didn't have it like that. I mean, we had ice for weeks, and I'm talking thick ice for us anyway. Well, our beaver are not used to seeing anything like that. They don't do anything, you know, at all. And from looking back on my season, the mistake that I made, that I could have instantly switched over to if I would have planned it out, but I wasn't expecting that, and that's my fault, not the weather's. I should have had a bunch of kill poles set all over the counties that I was at. That way, when that happened, I could fire the water traps, I could open loops on kill poles, and I would have, within 24 hours, I could have been out of a line that's not going to be producing very well. to a very productive line with a little bit of planting. So that's probably what I'm going to be doing this winter. So before season opens, I'll have kill poles all up down the rivers, creeks, and farms, and on the fences and everything else around here. So there won't be a snare there, but as soon as I need to go to that, because the weather starts acting, if it does it again this year, I can snap those traps off. I can go open loops. I can run those loops till the water opens back up. I can close those loops, go open my water sets up if that's what I'm interested again in next year. And that way I'm not having a downtime like I did this year. You know, I went out and set snares, but to go just out and find places to set snares, it's just not that productive. So that's one of the things that I noticed that I really could have did better on. And one of the things we got to plan around this year, and I think you're going to see some of this on Trapping TV. I don't know if we've got anything on Wolfer Nation. We've been, Norm's built these cages for beaver and otter where they're like a big colony trap. And we played around with all different kind of doors and what we thought was going to work. So this would be like generation 3, I think. Well, generation 4, we're hoping is going to be the ticket. But it's still a really cool idea that's really fast in the right situations, even though they seem big and bulky. If you know that location's there, you know, you can take 6 or 8 of these things out there and get them in there. And the cool thing about them is, if you find the right locations, because you don't have to set the trap and different things like that, you don't have to really, especially for otter, there's a lot of locations that it's a little too big for a conibear, but these things will fit the niche. I can keep it there the whole time that I'm here and still be catching animals. So that's one of the things we were dealing with or playing around with these cages. I mean, it's a really cool idea, and I don't think it's going to replace the body grip trap, but in certain situations, they were really slick. You know, we had stable water this year, which was nice, you know, but I can't plan on that in the future. It's something in the mountains I'm just not used to seeing. We actually had water dropping in the winter. Most of the time, you're constantly fighting it to go up, but that was pretty weird. You know, some of the things that we got involved in this year, different than most, is we started doing Trapping TV, which you can see on Wolfer Nation or on our YouTube channel, which is Wolfer Nation. And what it is, you know, we're seeing stuff, or like, you know, when it's just trying to do a show on trapping, you know, just kind of see what happens. And Mike Kimball and Will and Scott Adams and then Norm and me and Brandon Johnson, it's kind of like, I mean, it's just like a show. And it's been really fun when we do get together. And then Will's been running around like a crazy man filming everybody. You know, he's going from Ohio to North Carolina to Tennessee to North Carolina to Texas. And if you haven't seen it, the quality is impressive. I think the content's pretty impressive. You know, and it's as good as anything on the Outdoor Channel. I truly believe that. You may not have some of the graphics before or after, you know, the big gee whiz stuff, but as far as content, most are running about 25 minutes, and that's without commercials. So really, that'd be like an hour-long show on the Outdoor Channel because of just the commercialization of those things. You know, and we've really enjoyed it. It's went pretty smooth. We got a ton of content because we're all trapping so much. You know, it's not trying to get enough content. Now it's trying to figure out what we're going to use. You know, and if you hadn't seen it, you know, do it. But that's one of those great things. If you think you've got whatever it takes to put something out there like that, go for it. Because all it cost us was time, effort, and some cameras. And some editing equipment and time. And we're just seeing where it goes. And we've really enjoyed that. Now, the thing I'm doing right now, I mean, I just got back from Texas. I haven't really been on the computer. I'm basically just taking about a week or so off, just trying to get my head right. And, you know, I've been taking a lot of naps like a 2-year-old baby during the day. still doing orders, stuff like that. I haven't really been working the internet or emails or Facebook or anything like that. But all that's going to change. But basically what Predator Control Groups or what I'm doing right now is we're moving our lure shed, all the contents, over to our new building. And luckily, it's only like 100 yards away, because I cannot imagine trying to do this across country, across town. I have no idea how we had that much stuff in a one-car garage. You know, and it, guys that usually show up here taking instruction, they expect to see some great big facility for the amount of lure we sell. But me and Travis is the one that's been helping me bottle this year. You know, we've got a path and about 4 foot to work in, and it was just nothing but supplies and inventory walls out. You know, we kept stuff in my camper, we kept stuff in the brown building, we've taken over 2 spare bedrooms. Well, now we bought this other house, and then we're going to turn. You know, I got tickled at Travis yesterday. He looks up and he goes, "Dang, man, your lure shed's got crown molding in it." Well, it's a 1,300 square foot brick ranch home that got foreclosed on next to us, so we bought it. And we're taking that house and we're turning that into a lure shop and packing shop and stuff like that. So that's what I'll be doing probably for the next month. Because once we get the inventory over there, then we got to get all of the DVDs and the t-shirts and all that mess over there. And then we got to set up the packing area, do some maintenance on the house. I've got to fix the well because it froze this winter. Just different stuff like that. Then we got to go into production on lures. But luckily, while I was gone, Travis worked his butt off and helped keep inventory up this year. So this is the first year that I can remember that we're going into a season without being danger low on about everything. So, you know, this is hopefully going to be a lot easier. And with that other space over there, you know, I'm not having to lean over the mixer to turn on the grinder or get to the sausage pressing machine to put bait in bottles. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I'm going to be shooting some videos to just post on either probably Wolfer Nation or YouTube or Facebook or somewhere, just kind of how that's going over there. Because it's, you know, I got tickled yesterday. Randy Smith sent me a bunch of glands, and I'm sitting there sorting them out in the kitchen over there. And I've got one sink full of castor, one sink full of otter glands, and I've got paper towels on one side with bobcat glands in it, and then a paper towel on the other side with a bunch of oil sacks. So I know how much weight it is, so I know how to get the money to Randy. That's in the kitchen sink. So it's a little different than just having a shop. But I'm excited about getting some elbow room, I can tell you that. But that's what we're going to be doing. I'm probably not going to be as accessible on the phone here for a couple weeks because we've got to get that done. Because when we do orders now, I don't know if it's in the van, in the camper, in the shop, or in the new building. Because we're moving all that stuff all over the place trying to get it lined up. So hopefully we'll get all that taken care of. We'll get everything back online. I get to get back on the computer and keep pumping out articles and information that hopefully helps somebody out. And then we'll see everybody at conventions. But that's kind of just wanted to kind of go over what the season was like and some of the lessons that I learned this year. You know, if I'm going to have ice, I need to have a plan for it. And the way the weather's going, that's going to become more common. If I'm going to go to places that's going to have a lot of pressure, I've got to have a plan for it. You know, we outgrew our lure shop, so our plan is to get a bigger building. So that's what we did. And we're looking forward to that. I know Travis is. I had a great season as far as learning. I had a great season as far as enjoying it. I had a lot of fun with the Trapping TV guys. You know, it was always fun having a cameraman there. Got to take Travis out. First time he about jumped in the river when a raccoon lunged at him from a dog-proof trap. A lot of things like that went really well. You know, the catch was not what it normally is. That's just life. That's just trapping. The reason to get upset about it, I'm just going to figure out a way to have a better catch next year. That's all I can do. That's all you can do, too. So think about that. Do your own after-action review on your season. what went right, what went wrong, what could you have changed, what would have been different if you'd have planned for it a little bit different. And when you start doing that, your seasons start becoming more efficient. And efficiency is the key to making money in trapping. So do your own action review, and we'll talk to you next week.